Off the Groove with Scotty Dubler.
It's Friday, April 12th, 2024. Episode 262 is here. Thank you to Haley. Last Sunday, I went up to Madison, Wisconsin with my girlfriend Michelle and the owners of the World Championship Ice Racing, Ken and Christy Reamer. We went up there a little bit early and we met up with the three-time quad champ Tyler Allen, his girlfriend Nicole, his mom Wendy, and dad Chicky for dinner up there at Players. Thank you to Wendy for picking up the dinner tab. We definitely appreciated that. Then we walked down the street to the Barrymore Theater. This place was almost sold out. I've never been there before. It holds about 750, and I bet there was at least 730 people there. Hardly any open seats. It was amazing. Sat with Mark and Lisa Muth from Black River Falls, Wisconsin, and got to sit with them. Got to see a lot of people I haven't seen for quite a while, and really, really enjoyed this documentary film about Charlotte Canes, women that race in a flat track, and it talked about other forms of motorcycle racing too. It kind of had an On Any Sunday feel, explaining our sport, flat track, but it was just really cool. It was so much fun. I don't want to give too much away. I was honored to be a small part of the movie. I actually went to the recording studio a couple of months ago, and Wendy asked me several questions, and she used some of those answers and put me on the big screen, and I'm honored to be in this documentary movie. So if you didn't get to go up there to Milwaukee, there are two more showings coming up on April the 18th at 8 p.m. and April the 20th at 11:30 a.m. up in Milwaukee. For tickets, angelsofdirt.com. Get your tickets now because, again, this one was almost sold out, and that was in Madison. And what I also liked about this movie, it's part of the Wisconsin Film Festival, and they asked Wendy several questions. They did a little Q&A with the audience afterwards, so it was really cool. I definitely enjoyed my Sunday night. I do have the results from the RVA race in Virginia and the RPM race in Champaign, Illinois, but they're going to have to wait. Since Carter left the podcast, I've had to learn a lot of stuff. Stuff that's over my head. I didn't feel comfortable doing the podcast for quite a while. Been doing it on my own. Of course, my daughter Haley has helped a little bit. Her sister, my bonus daughter Rachel's helped, you know, with some of the thumbnails. But this one I did on my own as far as recording goes. Haley still helps me with the thumbnails and stuff like that. But I have my first guest. And I'm super excited to share that with you folks. I'm very thankful this guest was patient because we recorded some last week. I thought we lost everything. We recorded some this week and lost a little bit of stuff too. I don't know if it's, you know, technical issues. I know last week it was part of it was due to the storm, but this week I lost some of my audio. So had to go back there and re-record some of my audio. But anyway, without further ado, joining me on the podcast to talk about an upcoming race up in Canada is former number 89T, national number 73, and number one up in Canada, my good friend, Dougie Fresh, Doug Lawrence. Doug Lawrence, what's going on, buddy?
Scotty D. I'm great, man. It's funny to have your phone number. It's great. It's great. But in my phone, I have you as your name on my... my contact on my phone is Doobie, D-O-O-B-I-E.
So. Yep.
So I've seen that one come up on my phone in a while. So
I know, right? It's been a minute. I know you got to come down here and work with a few different teams the last couple of seasons as like a rider coach or a mentor. How did that go?
Yes, it was great. You know, it was kind of like an opportunity that... I never thought it could happen in the sport. And, you know, kind of as I was leaving the sport, the teams were getting bigger and gaining some traction in some ways, as we know. And had the opportunity to come down and help out some Canadian riders. And it was fun. It was good while it lasted. You know, it's funny how much experience, you know, this sport is so much based off of... just hours and reps and experience and stuff like that. So just to kind of pass that information along for a year was a good time. And, still a huge fan of the sport, man. It's, sometimes it's, go through, I'm 39 years old now and been through some, rough patches in the sport. And, to make it through all of those and still be around to watch every single race and, for the most part, enjoy all of them. It's still what I love. So still in the loop for the most part. My you know, my contacts are retiring and stuff like that. And my good buddy Brian Smith is running the show now. So obviously I'm still in the loop with a lot of my friends. So it's awesome.
How hard was it for you to walk away from the sport? I know you're coming down to the United States, you know, quite regularly, and I know that's got to be hard coming from Canada, crossing the border every single AFT round. But how hard was it to take a step back and you know, kind of retire, because you're still racing up in Canada quite a bit, or you know, somewhat. But how hard was it to walk away from AFT?
Right. Yeah. Great question. It was, honestly, man, it sounds weird, but it was fairly easy. You know, I love this sport so much and loved it so much. And yeah, I rode, my last race was Springfield Mile in the fall of 2018. So at that time, as everybody knows, like the Indian was taking over at that time. Obviously now hindsight's 2020, the Indian's on its way out now, which is crazy. But at that time, you needed an Indian to be successful and to achieve the goals that I wanted to achieve in my career. And I didn't have an Indian. So there was not one available to me. I was running a limited schedule. So the offers that I could have pursued, I had no interest in, because I didn't want to race a full season. So basically, it was kind of easy, which sounds weird, because I feel like I was the best rider when I retired. I rode for a couple, I would say a couple good teams in the last few years, on bikes that were pretty good, but not good enough to do what I felt like I could do. So that was kind of easy for me. You know, obviously the competitive side and stuff was hard to let go. But as you mentioned, man, like we have a good series up here, and we have a good local series, and we have good racers on, you know, pretty darn good quality racetracks, racing for a decent purse. So being a Canadian and retiring from the American Flat Track Series, it's kind of like just a step back. And in the last bunch of years, so with a couple of years there, were a bit different due to COVID, and COVID in Canada was a lot more, the things were taken a lot more cautiously in Canada during the COVID years. So, man, it was weird. I had, you know, I reconnected with I basically re-met my now fiance and had a son at the end of 2020 and COVID. So I had, you know, an unconscious break from flat track motorcycle racing, and it was, you know, I'm not coming back, like, you know, eight pistons firing, but you know, I'm having a blast doing it. Like, we'll talk about my race, the battle at the border here in a second, but that racetrack is 45 minutes from my house, and we can race there every Saturday night. I leave my house at 2:30 and race and have a beer and make, you know, some pretty darn good money, and I'm home for Sunday morning coffee with my now two kids and fiance on Sunday morning to enjoy the rest of the weekend. So I get my fix, definitely. I'm still like, I just came from the gym, Scotty, that's where I was. So I'm still I still have like the competitive nature, I guess, maybe not so competitive, but just goals for myself. You know, I want to be fit and want to race with the top guys in Canada. And I've had some really fun years racing in Canada. To circle back to AFT, in like 2020 there was like an off chance I could have rode a couple races on an Indian and got super excited about that, but that door closed. And then for about 2 weeks this off season, I was like, man, I'd love to get my license and ride some of these singles races on some of these slick car tracks that are, you know, pretty close up in the Northeast, like in New York and New Jersey. A couple of those tracks appeal to me and my riding style, but I mean, come on now, let's be realistic. I don't want to drive more than an hour to race these days. So, so that's closed, but yeah, still racing. You know, I mountain bike a ton. I'd say, you know, bicycle riding and mountain biking is what, where my interests are right now outside of my family and work. So, but Yeah, I'm good, man. Super good. Totally where I want to be. And, you know, I'm good buddies with Doug Beattie. I was working last night and, just, we talk so often about, you know, our careers. You know, he's probably 47 now. So he raced, in the 90s and stuff. And he ended up leaving, you know, having a fairly short professional flat track career and went to downhill mountain biking. And, you know, we talk and just, you know, love the sport. Definitely. Things have changed in like fast forward in the last few years, but, still a huge fan and, super into it, man. Follow along really closely still.
With your busy schedule, Doug, how much racing did you do last year?
So last year I raced, 3 racetracks. So, and all of them were 45 minutes away from my house. So I live in a city called Hamilton, Ontario. It's, right by Niagara Falls. It's basically in between Toronto and Niagara Falls. So, most of the Flat Track Canada races. So up here we have a Flat Track Canada series, and then we have the Welland County series. So the Welland County series has 8 races, and then the Flat Track Canada series has, I think 9 races, and one of those 9 races is at Welland. So the other 8 Flat Track Canada series races are fairly close to here as well. So I raced 3 Flat Track Canada races last year, plus, the Battle at the Border. And, yeah. So, I mean, they're all the same, you know, pretty good racetracks. There's some beautiful racetracks up here, beautiful, cushion racetracks, and, also some good, sprint car racetracks. So the sprint car racetrack is Ashweken. Like, they have World of Outlaws, car races there, sprint car races there. So it's like a world-class facility. We have a race there. Yeah. So right where I am is where it's all happening. It's a tough sell to call it a national flat track series, but all of the flat track racing in Canada is right around where I live and where all the guys that you know, they're all from around here, which is fortunate for us, but a little unfortunate for maybe people on the West Coast, like in British Columbia and stuff.
And just how did you decide to become a race promoter?
Ooh, well, so when I was younger, they always had a race call at Welland. It was called the, it was like the Can-Am, you know, Canada versus America, or like the 600 Invitational, you know, 600 CC bikes. So I'm talking back when I was like a little lad, like, so racing in Canada, you need to be 14 to race. When I first started, I was racing in America, Michigan, and you needed to be 14 to race in Canada. So you've heard about all these stories about Parker and Moorhead and Bigelow and Coolbeth coming up and racing when they turned 14, because you could race anything. When you were 14, you could race anything in Canada. So I remember being a young buck and peeking over the boards at Welland County Speedway at my dad racing in the novice ranks and maybe 1 year of intermediate ranks, and you know, not really having any idea what the hell's going on. But I remember like Rick Winsett and Craig Estelle and, you know, challenging some of our Canadian guys like John Parker, Scott Sale, Chris Evans, Steve Beattie later on. So that race was always the big one, you know, and people would kind of, you know, have that one circled on the calendar, and it was a big purse and this and that. And I'll never forget all the Americans coming up with their fancy leathers, and they came once a year. And I remember the year that I was 14 and I was eligible to race at the, what then was called the 600 Invitational, you know, obviously in the novice class myself at 14, and just kind of thinking of it like, man, this is the big show. So, you know, it was always in the back of my mind it's been in the back of my mind for years. And as I was racing, obviously there was a bit of a conflict of interest, you know, because I was busy and I was racing, and I definitely wanted to race it myself just to say I did it, you know, just to say I promoted this race and raced against the guys that came from the States. So back to 2018, I retired and made a phone call to the then president of the Welland County Motorcycle Club. And he was keen, you know, he was into it. And, I was just a bit reluctant to pull the trigger because, you know, it was a bit of an undertaking, you know. My goal was to invite the highest quality of American flat track riders as I could and get the most purse money as I could to entice these fellas to come challenge us on our home turf. So 2018, I basically balked on it, and 2019, 2020, call them COVID years, 2021, 2022, there was a lot of border restrictions, right? So Canada, I believe until like 2020, the fall of 2022, you needed to be COVID-19 vaccinated to enter Canada. So let's not go there. Lots of Americans not vaccinated. Don't get me wrong. It was on my plate. It was on my to-do list. I wanted to do it, but just couldn't due to COVID restrictions. 2023 comes around, everything's lifted, and all you need is a passport to get into Canada. So you know what? I'm going to do it. So last year, yeah, I mean, that was it. It was just, you know, the premise of the race is to invite top quality American flat track riders to challenge us on our home turf, on our home track, and put on a show for, you know, there's a huge fan base in Welland County. And obviously lots of racers come from the city of Welland, lots of families from Welland, and there isn't too much cross border, you know, there's races at Weedsport, even Lima or Syracuse years ago, but it's a bit of a jump to get our fans to go down there, right? You know, it's obviously just, it's just how it is, right? So, yeah. So last year, and, you know, bit off a bit, and yeah, I got Halbert up here, and, you know, we had a great time, had a good mountain bike ride the day before. And, you know, last year was kind of like, you know, I don't know how to word it, but, you know, I did it, and it was kind of like last minute. And it went pretty darn well, you know, like I think it was received pretty well by the club for sure. Like their numbers and attendance were the most fans they've had in 5 years. So that's great. So we're going to do it again in 2024. And yeah, kind of the same thing, you know, more of a show is what the plan is for 2024, round two battle at the border. We're just going to have less classes, you know, basically going back to the old days of having more of a show, less classes, featuring a Dash for Cash. Now, the Dash for Cash is basically the battle at the border. So I stole this off of the night before the Sacramento Mile, yep, the night before, yep, the National. You know it well. You announce there every year how they do the single lap qualifying, right? Remember? So we do that here. We call it right after opening ceremony, 6 p.m. is Super Pole. So Super Pole is every rider does one lap, and it's timed, and that is your Super Pole qualifying lap. And then the top three Canadians face the top three Americans based off of those Super Pole times, and they meet at the battle at the border of the Dash for Cash. Six riders for cool for the Dash for Cash money, and then along with that, obviously, the there's the Open Pro class, and they can also ride the 450 Expert class. So
some extra money for the Dash for Cash. With the Dash what for I cash. Also notice is there's a $12,000 pro purse, so that should draw some of the heavy hitters from down here.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yeah. I hope so. Last year was $7,700, and this year I kind of bared down on it and wanted to get some more money. And all that purse money is coming from fans, or not fans, but, you know, participants in the sport. You know, Jerry Stinchfield, I did a small favor for him a few years ago, and I think he's reciprocating that back to me and helping out for this race. And so appreciate Jerry with Roof Systems. Obviously, he's making the American flat, a lot of the American flat track paddock go around these days. So he's helping out with my race up here, which is appreciated. Yeah, Shane Corbeil with Alliance Tire Service he was the first phone call I made. He's a friend of mine who's got a small business down in Welland, and kind of thought he would fit the bill on being the first phone call I could make to get this thing going. So yeah, up to $12,000, which is amazing. That is Canadian dollars. Now, it's You know, when you guys win Canadian dollars and turn it around to American dollars, it is less. But I think $12,000 is quite a lot of money to shy away from if you choose to. But it's still a really healthy purse. It's healthier than an American flat track purse, if I do say so myself. So and lots of perks. There's lots of perks for Americans to come up to this race. You know, if you're interested in coming, geez, message me on Instagram or email or message Scotty. And yeah, would love to have you guys. And yeah, just make a better show. It's very professionally run. And sorry, I'm rambling on a little bit, Scotty. But this year, featuring the Legends class. So we've done away with all the youth classes, and we are featuring a Legends class. So that is mostly Canadian flat track legends, along with a few American legends. And I can't really say who's confirmed yet, but lots of Canadians interested for sure. Flat track legends interested for sure.
We talked about the streamlined program a little bit different than last year, but you will have a novice class, intermediate class, expert class, a legends class, a vintage class, and a veteran class, along with the pro class. So it's going to be a great event. Last year, you took the main event win, but it was Justin Jones who won the Dash for Cash. So what's going to happen this year? Or do you want to throw any predictions out there? Or you want people just to show up and see?
Yeah, just show up and see, man. Like, it's a very racy racetrack. It is a short track, probably a quarter mile, I would say, right on the dot. It's really racy. Last year was pretty one-lined. It was a rare spring. It was dry and really windy, so it was tough for track conditions. So, you know, do better than we did last year. We're going to have less classes, and we're going to do more track prep. So that will be good and open up the track a little bit to have better racing. So, yeah. Yeah, it races really safe. You know, obviously racing motorcycles is a pretty, can have its dangers, but it's fairly round and slick and really racy, and it changes throughout the night. So obviously us locals, we have the upper hand, but there are some perks. You know, we're going to give the Americans some freebie practices and tons of laps. There's tons of laps for you guys to get dialed in. And by the time the Open Pro main event comes around, I think, you know, a lot of these top tier American riders will be up to pace of the locals.
Let's talk a little bit about some AFT races. I know you've been paying attention. You said you still keep up and you have friends that race in the sport. So let's talk about the Super Twins. What do you think about Dallas Daniels? I think he's the real deal.
Dude, he is. Just a true professional, right? Like, wise beyond his years, like even like behind the microphone on the racetrack, you see very minimal mistakes, and he's learning from the best, right? He's always up there with the likes of Briar Bauman and, in my opinion, the best, Jared Mees, you know? So, and he's taking it in. You barely see him make a mistake. And, yeah, I just think it'll be the changing of the guard, you know, very, very soon, or maybe some of these race weekends. But yeah, Daytona, he's dialed in. But also, Jared doesn't go so hot at Daytona. He was getting going there the last half of the main event, Daytona 2. But Dallas and that bike just looks so good. Yeah, it'll be an interesting year, man. That Twins class is. You know, I think we're very fortunate to have Dallas. Like, the storyline is Dallas and Jared, you know, let's be honest. I think we're really lucky to have that. You know, it would be a shame if Jared retired after last year, but we all knew he wouldn't. So this year, you know, we could be watching something that we might not see for a while, you know, in the Twins class, because I think there's going to be a bit of a lull in the Twins class moving forward here after this year. So, yeah, man, I think we should take it in while we can. I think it's going to be a good year. I think the schedule favors Jared. And, you know, some might think, well, how could you say that? He won so many miles. But, man, I think he's back on these clay car tracks like Sonoya. Man, I mean, a day race car track, I think Jared Mees is the best ever. the points that Jared's going to leave on those on the table at those TTs, you know, Dallas is going to be the boy that picks them up. So that'll tighten things up. By no means do I think it's going to be a runaway. You know, I think it's going to be similar to last year where it comes down to the last race. I'll be watching closely, man, because I do think it's going to be tight. Yeah, it's just interesting to see how things are closing on Jared. You know, I don't want to speak for him, but we're good friends. We do keep in touch pretty close. And, I don't think he would want to build another program with another motorcycle. And the Indian kind of is being the door is closing on the Indian being at the front. And if I could say that politely. And I kind of think it'll be Jared's last year, in my opinion. I have not spoken to him about that, but I just think the timing and everything is kind of facing that way, I would say.
How about Brand Robinson? Start off the season really strong with a good performance down there in Daytona. Had a great finish also at Sonoy. If he stays healthy, he's sitting in a good spot after three races looking into the rest of the season.
For sure. And, you know, I thought of him too, a lot of these car tracks again. And so you think, okay, there's two Daytonas. We know he goes good at Daytona and we know he goes good at Springfield Mile. So that's four out of the races. And in the middle of those races, there's a whole lot of car tracks and he goes good at all the car tracks. And then there's a Lima. So we know he goes good there. And the two TTs, man, he's sure that's his weak point, but man, like, that's a pretty good looking schedule for B-Rob. I think, right. I think you said it. If he can stay healthy, I think, man, he could be in the hunt. I think you might see him in the podium position while Breyer's figuring out their program over there with the new bike and frame and team and stuff like that. Yeah, I think Breyer at Daytona was going good. I think you can ride, you know, a guy like Breyer is just going to be able to ride any motorcycle to a pretty good result at Daytona, the way that you can ride the track. But I think at Sonoya, I think they had their struggles pretty bad. He didn't look like Breyer Bauman at Sonoya. But those boys over there, man, they're going to be getting to work. And I think that'll be... that might be the last of their weak races. I think they'll be moving forward, you know, especially with not too much depth in the class. So I think they'll be squared away as they get going here.
What do you think about Sammy Halbert and the XR 750? He had the crowd going crazy down there in Florida.
Yeah, for sure, man. Everybody was cheering for him. I know I was with the old XR, and me and Sam have become good buddies. You know, I appreciate him as a person. That boy's been through a lot of things in his life, and it's crazy to hear. How do I say it? Man, like so many years, you know, I'm good buddies with Brian Smith and traveled with him to out west, you know, a lot of those races back in like, what are we talking, like 12, 13, 14, 15, when him and Sammy Halbert were just like nose to nose battling. And, you know, what a storyline. There was this new motorcycle, a Crosley motorcycle. And then you had Sam Halbert that was with his dad. And, you know, he was getting, you know, it's kind of strange to say, but he wasn't loved by everybody. You know, the way he rode and stuff, he was, you know, maybe not a fan favorite. But, man, hearing the crowd at Daytona cheering for Sammy Halbert on an XR, it was like the whole thing came full circle. And just cool to see. You know, I know him well now, and I know what he wants out of these last AFT races that he's competing in. And he's looking around, taking it all in. And it's just cool to see him, you know, as an older guy. I think he's the same age as me. So just, man, it's like this sport, you can continue to be competitive if you ride smart. You know, he's riding the same speed as he was riding back in 2013, but he's doing it accurately and not making mistakes. And I think when the bike started to smoke, obviously that's stuff was going through his head, and then shit, like the guy gets black flagged, and let's be honest, we all know what he's thinking at that time. And You know, I think he kind of got mentally knocked off of his mindset. So, and then ended up whatever he finished. And then day two, I think he was just kind of a sitting duck. But man, I know he was happy with his Daytona weekend. And I think he'll be back for the two California races on the XR. And I'm cheering for him, man. I want him to win one of these things.
So, Doug, we talked a little bit about the Super Twins. Let's go to the class that you mentioned a few moments ago that you were thinking about coming back to, this Parts Limited AFT Singles class. My opinion, that is the most stacked class that we have in some of the best racing, and Cody Kopp is the man to beat right now, a first, a second, and a first. I mean, that kid's on fire.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I just think... You know, obviously, like he had some good backing for those couple of years, but I don't think him losing that KTM Red Bull support is going to change much for the fellas in the singles class. I think it'll probably be very, very much similar, and I'm sure there's some things that you know, his hands might have been tied, you know, riding with the factory supported effort there last year, so maybe he'd be freed up a little bit and can do some things that that he wants to do, because we know his dad pulls some things out of his sleeves sometimes, and you know, he's quite the experienced guy, so I'm sure that he's going to have some things that he can pull from his toolbox and help out Cody this year. You know, yeah, crazy series, man. I mean, I think you know, man, like what an experienced ride he had at Sonoya. It was like, I'm not sure who would have caught the, like, you know, a trained eye saw that he was running a pretty strange line, like a B-Rob-esque line there in one of the ends of the corner. I don't know if it was 3-4 or 1-2, but he was kind of coming in low and entering, or coming in low and exiting really high, kind of like missing all the bumps and the shitty holes and stuff, and getting like huge amount of crazy quarter speed. So it's just crazy to see that as somebody who's still so young, and he's already got two championships under his belt. It's pretty insane.
What about Dalton Gauthier? Earlier in the year, they said they weren't sure they were going to run the entire season. They win the challenge race at Sonoy. They've got some momentum. They're sitting second in the point standings. You know, if they win down there in Texas or have another podium, don't you think they'd run the entire season?
Yeah, sure. I mean, kind of got the inside line on that, but I'll let him drop that news. I was just bugging him to come to the Battle at the Border race, and he shared with me that probably going to go forward with the season. So I think that's a huge from a fan standpoint, that's awesome, right? He brings so much to the series, right? And he's a front runner, right? So if he's if he was to not go to California, it'd be quite the bummer for some people cheer for him like I do, man. Like, he's such a talented rider, man. It's insane how good he rides a motorcycle and all that. So I think those racetracks out west too, I think he'll do well. So to keep, you know, Tom Drain and Cody Kopp honest, it's awesome to have him. Hopefully he does the whole series.
Are you surprised at how good the Australians are doing in American flat track? You know, talking about Tom Drain and Max Whale. We've had some riders in the past like Mick Kirkness and Luke Goff, and they both seem to have good careers. But are you surprised more Australians don't come up here and try American flat track?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like there's been no shortage of talent that comes out of Australia, whatever they call it, dirt trackers that come out of Australia. I think Tom's, you know, quite different. You know, obviously Max Whale has so much talent, and he's an experienced American flat track rider now. So he's been on the wheels and tires and tracks for, well, a long time now, I guess, you know, six, eight years, maybe. Well, time flies. But, yeah, I mean, just to see somebody that comes over and like adapts so quickly, I think his background is quite different from, Mick Kirkness or Max Whale, or I'm sure we're forgetting some Aussies that were, rippers, but, I know he was a road racer, you know, back and forth between his dirt track weekends and road racing a lot and riding some supermoto, but, I think we all had our doubts coming into the 2023 season about, you know, if he'd be able to be a championship contender. And then, like, when he went to those slippery car tracks, you know, I'll be honest, I'll say that I figured he might struggle at. He he held his own and was like going real fast. So, I mean, pretty damn well rounded, and he's adapted really quick. Obviously, the miles are going to be he's going to be tough to beat. But then again, only a few miles. But yeah, kind of like B-Rob, there's really no holes in his program. It'll be interesting to see how things shake down if he moves up to the twins class in a couple years or something. He's going to have to put on a bit of muscle. And but yeah, he sends it, man. Hard on the throttle. It's he's exciting to watch.
We have Chase, our teammate, sitting in fifth, Trent Lowe. But what about the rookies, Evan Renshaw and Braden Fanders, 12th and 17th in the points so far?
Yeah, just those guys, I guess. I mean, Evan Renshaw, man, he reminds me of like a tall Jake Johnson. You know, the way he sits on a bike, he looks very relaxed. He looks like a natural on a motorcycle. So the way C-Tex bigs him up, he's got big shoes to fill already. I'm not sure if that's the right approach, but he's a modern day flat tracker doing the social media thing. And I'm on his side. Absolutely. Just hope it doesn't really doesn't affect him too much. You know, like just the business is on the racetrack first, I think. But I guess I'm old school now. But yeah, he's modern day, man. And man, what a talent he looks like too on a motorcycle. You know, Instagram flicks are one thing, but we've seen him finish up front at some outlaw races and stuff like that. As for Fanders, I apologize, I don't really know too much about him, but cheering for our guy Hunter Bauer. You know, he's getting his ducks in a row this year with his main man, his dad, on Yamahas this year with a little bit of support. So just building blocks for him, man. Like, he's had and trust me, he's talented on a motorcycle. He just he's had some flashes of good results and stuff like that, but I think it's just like, man, it's just it's a long slog, this thing. And it's kind of awkward to try and tell him and his dad that it's a learning process when you, in recent years, you've had kids like Cody Kopp, Tom Drain, just come up so fast, and they're fast right away. Dallas Daniels. But that's not the case for 90% of people. And just trying to put that in his mind. And you know, he had a good race at Sonoya. I believe he finished eighth. So I mean, just a building block, man. Just keep the ball rolling, baby steps, and he should have a better season this year.
All right, before we let you go, we have to do rapid fire questions, and then we have to do Graham's questions. So on the rapid fire, I want one answer for these next five questions. What is your favorite racetrack?
Ah, my favorite track. Calistoga, California. I just think the place is cool. I love Northern California. I mean, maybe not the best racetrack itself, but I love the vibe there. Flat track in California has never died, never gone away. And I think it's a cool place. I mean, you've got your Springfields and your Limas and all those ones that are wicked racetracks. But Calistoga, I would say.
I figured you would have said Tucson, because that's where you made your first AFT main event.
Oh, that place was not a very nice racetrack. I mean, that place comes to mind for sure. Hagerstown was always fun. I always liked that place. I don't know. There's like places like Savannah that were cool, but it sucked racing there. Don't let Corey Texter tell you any different. You know, that place, but the old Savannah with the big D shape. I mean, badass to ride around. Yeah. Like that Thursday practice day before the race was so rad. And then race day, it was like, womp, womp.
Now, don't give me 10 answers like you did on your favorite track, but what is your favorite bike you've ever ridden?
XR 750, man, for sure. My dad's XR, no doubt.
Do you still have it?
Yep, still have it. We'll always keep that one for sure.
Who is the next first-time champion in American flat track, either class?
Dallas Daniels.
Well, that was too easy. What about the AFT singles class?
I mean, I'm a big fan of Chase Sadoff and Brian Bigelow, but it might be a touch off of Tom Drain for a first championship.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot on this one, but who is your favorite flat track racer of all time?
Ooh, I can't answer that one. Just one guy. Come on, man. Well, I'm going to give you about 15. The best of all time has got to be, Scott Parker, just because he could always, like, put it down. Like, I mean, I wasn't in that era, but, like, you know, from videos and talking to people, when it came down to it, he could always win. Jared Mees, man. Like, just because I know him, friends with him, and just know what he puts into it, and know that he's not like a God-gifted motorcycle rider or athlete for that matter, and he's like forced it since 5, 6, 7 years old. Like, that's amazing. And I like how Kevin Atherton sits on a motorcycle. Was always so rad.
The last question is probably the hardest one, but what are you most proud of?
You know what? That's an easy one. When I, you know, I didn't really have too much difficulty like retiring from AFT because like we touched on earlier, just there were some things going on that just didn't allow me to achieve my goals. But I, oh man, I can't remember my numbers, but I think like you said, Tucson, like, you know, I made my first national at Tucson, but I'm pretty sure I added them all up one day when, I was like just hanging out one day and bench racing with my mind about flat track and my career. And I made 55 nationals and I think at podium or not podium, never podiumed any, but I finished top 10 in, I think, 25. And, you know, I was being, you know, at the end of my career, I was being and like being a bit choosy and picky on the ones I was going to. So, I mean, I wasn't ever a kid that was like, I did everything growing up, you know, I played hockey, all the sports and like, you know, I was never like solely, I love the sport, don't get me wrong, and always loved it, but just unconsciously kind of had a good mind of like what I was going to get out of it. And there'd be no way if you told me when I was 16, 20 years old at the end of my career, I'd make 55 main events and top 10, 25 of them. There's no way I'd believe that. So proud of that.
And now it's time for Graham's question. She still stays in contact with Fran, your mom, and she loves that. But she would rather watch you as a racer, but knows you'll do a great job as a promoter. Graham wants to know if your son Elliot will be racing soon so she can root for the next little Lawrence.
Oh, wow. I doubt it. It might be disappointing. I doubt it, but you never know. But yeah, he'll be doing great, and I appreciate the question, Graham, but he'll be doing fine whatever he's up to. It may be motorcycles, maybe not.
Well, Doug, before we let you go, we usually like to say, you know, give you a chance to say thank you to your sponsors. I know sponsors for the event are Alliance Tire Service, Roof Systems of Dallas, Texas, Evans Racing, Outdoor Travel, Performance ATV, DNA Auto Service, 1910 Sturgis Cycle, and Pro 6 Cycle. Is there anybody else you'd like to say thanks to?
Appreciate you having me on, giving me the chance to pump up the battle at the border, round two. You know, all those folks are, you know, in Niagara region, like I said, and, local to the Welland racetrack and the race, besides Jerry Stinchfield. Thanks a lot, Jerry. That's it, man. Just looking forward to a good race. And, man, if all these guys that are maybes come together, we're going to have a hell of a race. And I think, it's going to, you know, bode well with what I'm trying to do, like kind of have a nostalgia race where the legends are there with a mix of American legends with our Canadian legends, and have a good pro class for big money and a low key event that some AFT guys let their hair down a little and have some fun.
Dougie Fresh, man, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for your patience. I know it took us 2 weeks to get this done, but man, I certainly appreciate it, and good luck with your race. Battle at the Border 2, June 1st, Welland, Ontario, Canada.
No sweat, man. Thanks a lot, Scotty.
Well, we made it through my first episode with the guest by myself. I had technical difficulties both weeks, but I got it done. I've got some emails into the platform that I'm using to record. I did lose my voice about halfway through both of them. The first week, I thought it was the storms. The second week, I don't know what happened. Anyways, I got it done. Thank you again so much to Doug Lawrence for being patient with me. Thank you to my patrons. Thank you to Jim and Pat for sending that awesome paperwork all the time. I appreciate it. Thank you to Tim at Pro Plates, Access Media. And last but not least, thank you to all my listeners. We'll have a special episode coming out real soon right here on Off the Groove.